the recorder. This is our secretary. And we would like to wish everyone a very good year, happy new year, sweet year, with love. And if you have any question, Felipe, that you would like to ask, or Rodrigo, feel free to ask whatever you wish, whatever comes to your mind.
Eti?
Yes, yes, I can hear.
I am in the phone, so maybe the sound is not great, but I have a question about the apple, Eti, because
yes.
It's interesting because in the Catholic and Christian in Western civilization, we tend to think about the apple as the first fruit, you know, that Adam and Eve touched and have to know. But we also learn that this is a kind of misunderstanding, because it's not about an apple, but about peri, a fruit. And you also brought sometimes the image of the fig as a let's say, if we should pick one fruit, that one would be the fig, not the apple. And in tradition, Jewish tradition, let's say, I the only moment I hear about apple is in Rosh Hashanah. So I would like to hear it. What is the meaning of this fruit, or anything that you would like to say about it? Thank you.
Thank you so much for the question. We say apple in English, and in Hebrew it's tapuach, and the tough, which has the value of 400 starts the word, and the rest of the letters is puach. It's like you blow something. Pu, tapu, ach. Yeah, so 400, and then pu, like blow, and then there's 8, the chet, or the spirit in it. So tapuach, in a way, not apple, but tapuach, is symbolizing all manifestation, because it's like it's something that it is blown, it holds the space. So whatever manifestation brings, this is what tapuach means. So whatever manifestation brings as appearance will be sweet. So there is a tradition of people dipping tapuach bidvash, apple in honey. Honey is sweet. And I would like also to speak about the honey in this relation. Honey in Hebrew, dvash. Who makes, or what makes the honey? The bee, devorah. And without the final hay of devorah, is davar or dibur, the speech. So the relation to the bee is not just the honey maker, so to speak, that the speech is honey. And the speech comes from the mouth, and the mouth is the seven opening in our heads. And the honey comes from the hexagon. This is the house of the bee. Yes, it's a hexagon. And the hexagon is like 6. It's parallel. It's a geometrical shape of 6 lines together. And the honey is poured into the 6. So like we have 6 days of creation, this is the hexagon. And the seventh day, or the light, or the sweet speech, the honey, this is a parallel picture. So again, why do we dip tapuach bidvash, apple in honey? That all appearance, yes, of the manifestation will be connected to the source. Not of our own doing. Does it make any sense? In a way, by the symbolic act of dipping apple in honey, this is in a way an act that says that we are not the doers. Everything comes from the source. And this is a very interesting, thank you, Rodrigo. This is very interesting because Rosh Hashanah is celebrated in the seventh month from spring, 7 months. And this is considered to be the month in which we retreat. And there is like, how do you say, recognizing in the fact that we are not the doers, we are not the creators, we are not the makers. And in the seventh month, there is a public recognition in the fact that there's a higher power. This is what Tishrei or Chaget Tishrei, the holidays of Tishrei, the seventh month, are about. Recognizing higher power. And this is before religion. Because Rosh Hashanah happens today, in this year, specifically on the equinox, there is a equal hours of light and equal hours of darkness. This is the autumn here, from this perspective, from South Hemisphere's perspective, is this even spring day. Who made such a thing? Yanis, good evening. We're so happy to see you. It's not by human, any kind of human did not establish the relations between the planet in the, how do you say, in the solar system. Shana tova, Yanis. Because all planets are standing in relation to the gravity of the sun. And this is where the seasons are coming in relation to everything. Everything is rotation in a certain mathematics or rhythmical pace. Non-human is not capable of doing it, of setting such a system. And in this month, what is the meaning of those celebrations, one after the other, is the recognizing that we are not the doer, recognizing in a higher power or higher source, that from which everything comes, rises, appears. This is basically what Tishrei is about. We have seen, or history shows, that there are kings in history. Until our days, there are kings, yes, but they are incapable of doing anything. Maybe they're called kings. Maybe they have crowns. Maybe they have rings. Maybe they have scepters. Maybe they've been anointed. But no human being is capable of setting those systems. And in this seventh month of Tishrei, there is a recognition of this, recognizing that we are not the doers. There's appreciation to life, Basically, it's a 1 month of appreciation to life, which are not coming from us. Maybe they come through us, through nature. But we are not generating none of these. This is why the sages say in the book of Zohar, Tishrei is written backwards. Taf Shin Resh Yod, 400 from the manifestation. 400 is 4. Shin, 300 is 3. Resh, 200 is 2. And Yod is 10 is also 1. So the more we pull back, we can notice that the source is doing whatever comes is coming from the source, and we have nothing to do with it. And there's a great joy that comes with it, because we can rest. If we think that we are the doers, we all the time thinking or thinking happening through us, and we calculate left, right, north, south, numbers. So if we think that we are the doers, we all the time are bothered with calculation, odds, percentage, chances. But at this point, there's a recognition that we are not the doers. And this is the great relief. And this is the greatest illumination, because we are not the doers and we can rest. Any questions, Rodrigo, Yanis, Felipe? And one of the Rosh Hashanah symbols is a blowing the horn. There's only blow or blowing. There is no blower. Yes, there isn't stop. There's just blowing. This is the stream that comes from the source. And the stream comes on the background of emptiness, because the shofar or the horn is just basically empty tube. And this is what symbolizes the beginnings of time, because what do we celebrate in Rosh Hashanah? That we are not the doers, there is a source. But with it, there is already accepting another unit of time which is coming. Yes, we pull back. We are not kings. We are not the doers. We are not the makers. And there's noticing in what is happening in nature, because the holidays are not standing for themselves. This is not anatomy of religion. This is how life is. This has nothing to do with religion. Religion is something very, 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 very late in time. Religion has to do with people thinking that they are kings and they are kingdoms. From this comes religion. We did not speak about this yet, but it has nothing to do with religion. Please pay attention. The holiday happens in the even day, in the autumn, North Hemisphere perspective, or spring, even day, South Hemisphere perspective. This is even point. And those holidays are coming from contemplating in nature. This is why many, many laws saying that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob used to keep in brackets the Torah before the Torah was written, or before it was given by Moses as a document. Why? Because this is contemplating on what is happening in nature. It's not to be aligned with nature. This is what life is. And in the seventh month, in the autumn, there's an even point between the light hours and dark hours, and we take back, we're not the doers. We're noticing a higher power that enables life here. And another unit of time, in a way, is being presented. And there is a respect for this. In the Talmud, or in the Hebrew sources, there is like discussion or debate from which part of the year we're counting the time, from spring or from the autumn. Regardless now from who says what, this is how those are the two perspectives. And one perspective says that from the spring counts freedom. Freedom counts from spring. Because according to the tradition, Adam was born in Rosh Hashanah. I mean, not exactly 6 days before. 6 days before. And Rosh Hashanah was the sixth day, according to the legend, to the lore. Yes, and he did not wait. So he went with development. So there are two ways to count the beginning of the year. Some sages celebrate the beginning of the year in spring, from going out of Egypt, as we see in the book of Exodus. Rishon ulachem lechodshei hashana. Nisan, April, is the first for you to count from freedom, from spring, after the darkness of the winter. So this is a perspective to count from spring as free people. And there's another way to count from the autumn. Questions? In Rosh Hashanah, there is no fatherhood, motherhood. There is acceptance and crowning or coronating the infinite as kings of kings. Yes, in Rosh Hashanah, this is why they call this month Malchut, Malchut, Malchuyot. There is recognizing that we are not the doers, and there's a coronation of the infinite as a king. We are not the doers. Also in Rosh Hashanah, Isaac was binded. And he was not sacrificed because he is not a thing. This was a mistake that Abraham considered to be a truce. But this was a mistake. Therefore, in Yom Kippur, in the Book of Prayer, and there is a great, it's like 500 pages of prayers just for Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. And there's the reciting during the whole 26 hours of praying. There's a reciting of the binding of Isaac. And there's like words which are repeating. Bera'ash, be. Please remember, when you're angry and it's not a, how do you say, dialogue between a man and a hidden king. It's basically all the prayers is to soften someone's heart. all the mechanism of praying, and it doesn't matter in which language, is to soften someone's heart, that he will see that he is not a doer. And there's a repetition along the whole Yom Kippur praying book. Please remember, when you're angry, please, or anger is rising, please remember the binding of Isaac. Please remember. Please remember. Because what happens in the binding of Isaac, there is a lust of killing in each and every human. And the lust of killing, people do not speak about this directly. Not everyone is speaking about this directly, but there was a lust of killing. The legends and the lores and the midrashim, they speak about it, but in a very subtle way. They're hinting about it. I don't want to open it, but there are texts which are confident about it and speak directly about it. And there is a lust of killing in each and every one. And in Abraham, there was a lust of killing. And it comes as a speech that comes, yes, from where? From the brain. That says that Isaac is an object, and this object is supposed to separate Abraham from the infinite. Of course, Abraham is not a subject and Isaac is not an object, but this is why the sages say this was his 10th and last trial. He had many, many trial. How do you say trial? Nisyonot? Tests in English. This is his last test, or the 10th test that he had is with Isaac. So with the lust of killing, he took Isaac. He separated first Isaac from Ishmael and Eliezer. There's a beautiful midrash in chapters of Rabbi Eliezer the Great, Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol. And in this chapter, there's a beautiful description how all of them are walking towards Mount Moriah, Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael and Eliezer, all four. But when they see from far Mount Moriah, Abraham asks from Ishmael and Eliezer, his assistant servant, please sit here with the donkey and we shall approach farther. And Ishmael and Eliezer are remaining at the place while Abraham continues with Isaac. And Isaac is very subdued. Not passive, but very subdued. He noticed the woods and the ropes and the fire, but asked Abraham, where is the lamb to sacrifice? And Abraham just brushed him off and says, God will see his sacrifice. But when they approach the mountain and they're already there, and he takes Isaac and ropes him to the stone, and then puts like woods to burn him. First to slaughter him with a knife. This is the first act. To disconnect the head from the body. His arms and his legs were roped, so we have four. Two arms, two legs, four. And he lifted his knife to slaughter Isaac, to disconnect his head from the body. At this moment, when Isaac saw the knife above him, his soul just disattached from the body, and he could not see anymore. He got blind. So Abraham lifted his knife to kill, first of all, to kill, to slaughter. Once you lift a knife on living creature, there's blood coming. So this is the first thing. The second intention of Abraham was to burn what has been first slaughtered. Please pay attention to all what is happening there in this chapter. This is the lust of killing that exists in everyone. And specifically because of that, the Bible is not saving any details from this print in a human being and tells us every detail. What happens is the divine comedy comes and comes a ram. A ram is caught his horn in the thicken of the bushes, and that makes a sound and a tension, and Abraham notices what is happening and says, please don't slay your son. Not your son. It's even better. Don't send your hand to the boy. It's not your son. At the beginning, before all the happening, he is the father, and sacrifice your son. Which son? The one that you love. The interpreters of the Bible says, I have two. I have Ishmael. The one that you love, Isaac. There's a father and son tango going on until the moment he lifts the knife. Once he lifts a knife to kill Isaac, there's a different kind of music going on. Don't send your hand to the boy. It's your hand and the boy. There is no relation of father and son whatsoever. It's a hand that lifts a knife and there's a boy. He is 37. Yes, 37 is the same value as Hevel, the first assassinated human that the Bible tells us. So don't send your hand to the boy. In the moment of killing, there is no father and son. There's just the hand and a boy. And this is a beautiful documentation of what happens to someone who is self-drunk. Yes, Abraham to, let's say, in opposite to what tradition books are trying to whitewash, yes, what is happening, he is self-drunk. His first test was Lech Lecha. Go off from your father's house, from your father's house, from your homeland to the land that I will show you, and I will make you a great father of nations and many, many... He leaves. Please pay attention. This is the first test or the first trial. Some say it's before because Nimrod, it depends on the reading, because Nimrod threw him to the fire. And he got out from the fire. But with Lech Lecha, there is a promise, and I will make you a big nation, or I shall make from you a great Av Hamon Goyim Netaticha. I will give you, I'll make you to be the father of many, many nations. So, in Lech Lecha, there is a promise. You will leave, but you will get something in return. You will leave the house of your father as a son, but you will be a father of many nations. There is here duality. But in the last test, there isn't, when he later, Isaac is born, there is no father and son anymore. So it starts with Lech Lecha. Leave your father's house, and I will, as in brackets, it's not written, leave your father's house. Your father's house, because he is the son of the father. it's not said, but it's to understood. So it's quite tempting. But in the last test, in Isaac binding or the binding of Isaac, there is no question of father and son. There's none of which. Please remember that the name Abraham with five letters has the value of 248. It's like the same number of the organs. This is the symbol of multiplicity. Two times two in the power of two, or two times two is four. Four times two is eight. Or two in the power of one, two. Two in the power of two, four. Two in the power of three, eight. This is a geometrical, how do you say, exponential geometrical, I don't know how to say this in English, but this is how the cells are multiplying. Or the organs, once there's an egg and sperm are meeting, there's a splitting of the blood cells. This is the first unit of life. So Abraham is the manifestation in his name for this multiplicity. A part of what later the lords and the Midrashim are saying about Abraham. So going back to the Book of Prayer of Day of Atonement, every few sentences, there's a saying, when anger rises. And so please remember, yes, please remember what? The binding of Isaac is not that God, the hidden infinite, will remember, but the man that reads those words will remember when anger is rising. It's just anger rising, not to take it into action. Do we understand? Does it make any sense, Rodrigo, Felipe, Yanis? I'm trying to find the verse. Yes, this is from, interestingly, from the Book of Habakkuk, chapter 3, verse 2. This is a quotation from the Book of Habakkuk, the prophet, chapter 3, verse 2. And this quotation appears in the Day of Atonement. Berogez rachem tizkor. When there's an anger, mercy you shall remember. Yes, this is from Habakkuk. Shalom, shalom, Jill. Shalom, shalom, Jill. Happy to see you here. Shana Tova. So, what happens? You sit with a community, doesn't matter where, and you open the Book of Prayer for the day of Atonement, and you read this hundreds of times. When anger rises, mercy, remember. Yes, you can read it in English. Probably in English it's softener, I guess. But this is like contemplation. When anger rises, Rachem, let's find Habakkuk, I would like, because there's the word Rachem, mercy, in Hebrew, is 248. In one of the Midrashim, I found that the word mercy, yes, is related to Abraham. Again, mercy, rachem, has the value of 248, like the value of Abraham. And the sages are saying that this verse helps people to calm down from anger. Yes, not to take anger seriously and act upon it. Because they say that mercy is related, we read it as mercy, rachem, but basically what it says, remember Abraham. Remember a man in his tough moment when he takes the anger, the lust of killing, as his own doership. What happens? Because what happens in Rosh Hashanah, another unit of time, now it's also this evening, there's a new month is coming. Yes, when the sun sets, we look into the western horizon, there's only darkness, we don't see the moon is not revealed. Only tomorrow it will be revealed. This is a complete darkness. But each evening we shall see more of the moon, more of light. So in the progress of time, or through the lens of time, there is a division. Who was before, let's say people say it's a father, and who comes after? And they will say it's usually the son. But the Torah says, no, there isn't. This is what people are still refusing to see. Yes, they take it as a story for itself, ta-ta-ta-ta. What is the chapter is about? The chapter is not about the father and not about the son. From divinity perspective or from the infinite perspective, there is no father nor son. This is only what the eyes are telling us, who was before and who appeared before and who appeared after. And the previous will always be seen as the cause or the father, and the later will be perceived as the son or the effect. Through the lens of time, through the lens of duality, but not from the infinite perspective. Therefore, we have the shofar. There's a blow in this emptiness. There is no father and son. There is no division of two. Our whole system is built on division of the two. We have two eyes, yes, two ears, two nostrils, but we have one mouth. There are 6 days of creation, and there's one resting day. And one resting day, the seventh day, is parallel to the mouth, which is in the middle of the face. The ability to speak comes from the soul. The seeing, the senses are also all the senses. Are coming from the soul. What we do, we make this division and we say, there is a seer, there is a hearer, there is a smeller, there is a toucher. We do this division. How can we explain that? That if people are staying in one room as a community and there's, let's say, a roses smell or flower smell or perfume smell, if people are clean and they notice, they will smell like good smell. It's in the air. It is one system. We say Joanne smells roses, and Eric smells the bread in the oven. We say, and according to what we say, we separate things. But to the truth, there is only smelling, seeing, touching, hearing. There is no separation. If everybody or everybody is capable of touching things, so there is no toucher, singular toucher. There's touching happening, or when people are type, yes, on a keyboard. There is no typer or typist, they're just typing. All this comes from where? And the seventh month from spring, Tishrei, is like the seventh opening in our head, the mouth. And the seventh month speaks the truth and says, hey, people, look around, notice, we are not the doers. Just enjoy, notice this, those universes, or universe, depends on how you want to look at it. We did not create it. We did not make it. We don't cause the trees to give fruit. We don't cause the sun to give the harvest of the wheat, of the barley, of the olives. We are not causing the fishes to multiply, the dolphin jumps, the birds to immigrate. We're not. Just notice this. Now this is autumn and the birds are immigrating in millions. They are going through Israel. From Europe, Asia, to Africa. They have to cross the Sahara later. But no, notice what is happening. Noticing what happening shows us that we are not the doers. We cannot take any charge of anything. We are not kings. There is no paternal, maternal, there isn't. Only to the eye of the beholder. When there's a separation, there's mother and father and son, but not from the infinite perspective. The more we look through the lens of the infinite, the more relief we have. To go to life with the story of I am the center of this creation, there's a me, there's a story that binds me. It is very heavy to walk with such a story on the shoulders, to carry such a heavy lifting story. Yes, about generations, to walk with the story in our head, to keep it, to keep this weight, to carry the weight on the, it is not just a lie, it is a weight. And it disables us and catch a lot of space inside. So why to let this false or this fallacy take so much space and gravity and weight if we're not of this place? There is appearance here, but our true nature is not of here. And this is a great recognition, even if it comes to us once a day. Yes, we are not the doers. We are not the makers. We are not in charge. Whatever we do, we can never calculate the infinite. Whatever we do, whatever we think, we cannot catch it. It's a falling system. Look at Abraham. Look at what is happening. Those stories about Abraham, one after the other. It's a story of a failing system. it is opposite to what people think. People look at the Bible as a book that says, oh, here, many, many years before our times, people were so purified, they were holy, they lived magnificent life. We shall never be able to top them. This is how people look at it, from all religions, from all perspectives. But this is not what the Bible is about. It's a documentation of how people in different times are just a manifestation of a falling system. The infinite stream through appearances. And while the infinite stream through appearances, we call it history or a story. And the stories in brackets that we read about in the Bible is not because those people were like above Übermensch, above humans. Not at all. The Bible describes failing systems. How Rebecca does not count Isaac in the blessing, and she has to dress Jacob, and so on. So if you look at it, it's amazing. Isn't that what is happening in our daily living? The beauty about the Bible, that it's a mirror. It's a mirror that tells us, look, this is human. A failing system. Many, many times I hear this glorified speech, look, they were holy, da 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 da. No, not at all. Not at all. But this is it. Questions? So why do we dip apple in honey? Yes. Why do we dip? We go back or we return to Felipe's question. It's apple we say in English. In Hebrew we say tapuach. Tapuach. Tav 400. Puach is like poo. When we say poo and we like blow air. Yes. Puach. Chet at the end is 8. It's just the blow of the manifestation. So it's not apple in English, it's what appears, the apples by its puffness, yes, symbolizes what appears in the manifestation. And whatever appears in a manifestation, we dip in honey. To symbolize that whatever appears is coming from the source, not due to our own merit, capabilities, talents, whatever. Because the source is sweet as the honey. The honey comes in a way through the flying of the bee, dvora in Hebrew, without the hay at the end is dibur, it's like the speech, symbolize it. Dvora, yes, bee, but in Hebrew it's hold the letters of speech. And the speech, like the dvora makes the honey, the bee makes the honey, the speech, yes, will be sweet as honey, which is coming from the source. As the honey comes from the house of the bee, how do you call it bee? The house of the bee in English. It has the shape of hexagon. Hexagon is also parallel to the sixth day of creation. Yes, and the honey inside of the hexagon is like the seventh day, which is coming after the 6 days of the week. So the seventh day is sweet as honey because it's the source, symbolizes the source. Therefore, our tradition has it that people usually dip apple in honey. Apple symbolizes the whole appearance of manifestation. That we should never think that it's due to our own merit, achievement, calculation. Everything is in honey. It's deep in honey because it's a connection to the source. Nothing comes from us. And with this beautiful message, I would like to wish each and every one of us Shana Tova, good year, Shana Nifla'a, marvelous year, happiness, love, health, and see you here as soon as possible on Thursday in the new year. Shana Tova, Shlomo, Shana Tova, Felipe, Shana Tova, Rodrigo, Shana Tova, Jill, Shana Tova, Yanis, a lot of health, infinite health to everyone. And Shana Tova to the listeners. See you soon and very soon. Little old.